On today's episode of The Coop Again, we're going to chat a little bit about Christian Pulisic's current form or his slump. Is he who we can rely on for this World Cup?
Wait till you hear me blame the Italians. In the second segment, we go through some AMA. We didn't ask me anything over on Threads, and we got some incredible questions. Koopa helps me out with that. And then in the third segment, we got a new sponsor, and we do a Smirnoff Ice six-pack of reactions. Wait till you hear this, that, and more today on The Cooligans. I think we're going to surprise some people with the other voice they're about to hear. Also, this feels weird. I feel like I'm driving in Europe. I'm sitting in the other seat. I hate this.
I can understand.
All right, that's my person, everybody. That's Koopa.
Hate that a little bit.
But I think you're the perfect person to talk to about this. I was having an argument with someone who lived in New York City for 10 years. 8 years ago, they moved out. They live close, but not in New York. Not in New York City proper. They don't pay the 4% city tax. Do you ever notice that the people who complain the most about New York City or think that it's like over or it's lost its edge or it's done are people who don't live in New York?
Absolutely. This is the number one thing lately. I'm like, wait, why are you yelling from across the river?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Do you live in Wisconsin, ma'am?
Yeah.
I see this up and down the internet.
What happened?
Why are you so worried about New York?
Yo, all I hear is, Mamdani's not done anything. First of all, I live here. He's done quite a bit. And I'm not even here to like defend politicians because who cares, right?
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's like, how do you know? You ain't there. You know what I mean? You don't know what's going on. Also, he's been there for 3 months.
3 months, but man's filling potholes. Man's out there making sure snow is moved.
He's done an incredible job.
We're doing and seeing more than we've seen in 3 months that we saw probably in past 10 years.
Definitely. You could add up the entire Eric Adams thing. This isn't even about like New York mayoral shit or whatever, but just I said, why'd you move? Like, why'd you leave New York 8 years ago? And he said, I don't know, man, but it lost its edge. And I was like, nah, you did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is how you lose a friend.
You got to stay
this
scrappy.
This is how you lose a friend,
stay
by
scrappy.
The way.
Stay in the trenches, man.
What do you mean it's lost its edge? You know what I mean? You haven't even taken the subway in 8 years. You drive in when you want to go to the theater. You know what I mean?
Very selective.
And this isn't even New York specific. It's always like when you're not around something, you're like, nah, it's not the same as it used to be. No, that just means you're not there.
Yeah.
Yeah, moves on without you. And the thing I love about this city in particular, I don't know how this works in wherever you're listening. We got fans in Chicago. We've got fans everywhere. We got fans in London. But like, if you live in a smaller town, maybe this doesn't affect you. But New York's one of those places where you leave for like 2 weeks and you come back and you're like, yo, what the hell happened? That used to be a Pinkberry. That used to be a Sweet
Cream. For real. You're like, when did that become a storefront for like, I don't know, designer Band-Aids? Right. And you're like, I don't know what happened.
I swore there was a different building here.
Yeah, it's gone.
Things move so fast here. I remember once very early in my comedy career, I was just at the point where I was like, I was on stage every night. Sometimes it was an open mic. Sometimes I had like a bar show as opposed to a club. But it was like I was ever present in the scene. It was like really early in that part of my career. And somebody hired me to do an editing project. And as much as I didn't want to do it, I knew it paid very well. So I was like, all right, I got to do this. And this was when I had a cracked version of Final Cut. Like this was like the one serial number everyone used. You know what I mean?
I downloaded the
torrent. Right? I think this is when we started Cooligans. This must be like 2015, 2016. Christian might've got me the cracked version of Final Cut. And I'm using this thing. So because it's the cracked version, it doesn't autosave. And I lost the entire project like 80% of the way through. And I made major cuts. The person who, the videographer stunk. Like I had to fix all the lighting. I color graded everything. I did everything and it was gone. I was distraught. But it was due now in like less than a week. And I got a week extension and I started working on it again. I made sure to save after everything. I shut down my computer and I was supposed to leaving it on. I did everything. I finally got it. But that took 3 weeks, three to three and a half weeks. And I had no shows booked because I was out for 3 weeks. So I was like, all right, let me go to an open mic. As soon as I walked into the open mic, my buddy Sean Donnelly, shouts to Sean Donnelly. He goes, the hell, man, we all thought you moved to LA. That was 3.5. It wasn't even a full month. And people just assumed, well, if I don't see you, you've left.
Yeah,
you've left. Think about how fast things move. And this guy's like, it lost its edge. Nah, buddy, you're watching Fox News. That's the problem. You can say whatever you want there.
I'm good. I agree. I'm just saying, a lot happens real, real fast in New York. If you can't keep up with the pace, maybe step aside.
Yeah. This ain't for you no more. You know what I mean? Go get a front yard. This ain't for you.
Yes.
Real quick, before we move on to the show, there's this thing I do with my wife, right, where she says, do I look fat in this? I say yes, if she does. Sometimes she's cool with it. Sometimes it pisses her off.
Has this yet resulted in, I don't know, a divorce threat?
Not yet, right? We're still married. But sometimes the look on her face was, I didn't need you to answer that. And sometimes it was, it's, thank you for letting me know so I don't go outside looking like a fool. How am I supposed to know which turn it is?
I mean, probably based on the mood of the day. Like, you got to, like, check the temperature. Like, is it good in here?
I got to do that. Alexa, does she want the truth?
Has she been playing angry music? Has been black metal been played during breakfast today?
That's a good point, right? Yeah. Is she playing dark ass music right now? Because I never get it right. You know, I think sometimes I do, but I'm just guessing. I'm whiffing out here.
See, you always have the, like, you're funny to fall back on, right? Really, like, I think that saves your life a lot. No,
it has, multiple times. Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine even being mad at you.
No, because, like, even my teachers in school.
Square up, and then the next thing, you say something ridiculous, and I can't even take my anger seriously anymore.
I had a really hot teacher in seventh grade, like, really hot. She was one of the first people I saw that had, like, short hair, and it worked for her. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people wore, like, yoga pants, but if it did, it would have destroyed me. You know what I mean? She was incredibly hot. Young teacher. Her name was Miss Foe. And I started calling her Miss Foe the Ho. Right?
Oh, no.
Just because it rhymed, mostly, but also in my mind, that's how it was working, right? And she caught me. And she laughed. I didn't get in trouble, nothing. I was, imagine calling a teacher a hoe. Like, that's suspension, expulsion.
Expulsion, for sure.
At least your mom showing up to school, right, with a chocolate on her hand if you're me, right? Nothing. She was like, Alexis, don't do that, man. Come on. I was like, I can't believe I get away with anything I want, as long as I'm saying it. Whenever I would
and
do something
to
get in trouble,
I'd get in trouble. And so the blueprint was laid, I see.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%.
You're like,
I
just have to be funny, and I'll just reclaim my power.
Well, that turned into, yes, you look fat in that shirt, and now we're not going out anymore. Now dinner's ruined? You asked me. Why would you ask me if you don't want the truth? We've been together for a long time, Kupo.
Listen, what I'm taking from this is, like, Dee's an angel.
Yeah, she really is. She puts up with a lot. Yeah, but so do I. Right? I get all these random questions. Yeah. I don't know. Good cop or bad cop. Which one's showing up today? You know, let me know. I'm going to have a light. Turn it on red if you don't want the truth. You know what I mean? Click the light on. And I know to be like, you look amazing. What are you talking about? Let's put another jacket on top of you. You know what I mean? To cover that up. But now let's get the show started. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Christine Cooper is joining me today.
Whoop, whoop.
Come on now. Christian, it's not just Mateo's birthday, but he's also taking a little bit of a break, right? Which you need if you work with me. I think that's pretty standard.
Maybe, perhaps. Yeah. I wouldn't opine on that.
We'll ask you at the end of the show. How are you feeling now? Do you need a stiff drink? But Christine Cupo's joining me. This had nothing to do with a country that had just gotten disqualified or not qualified for the World Cup. This is just, you're the homie, and we have a subset of fans that only listen when you're here. So we're happy to have
the Koopagans. We up.
No, they'll be on our mentions going, we're not listening. Kupo's not there. And I'm like, I don't know if you know this. We've been doing this for 11 years. She's not always here. But this is what happens. When one of us is out, Kupo comes in, pinch hits. It's absolutely amazing. We got a lot to talk about, but obviously we got to start with U.S. Men's National Team.
We do, don't we?
Oh, by the way, we're on Yahoo.
Yahoo!
Christian usually handles this stuff. The U.S. is about to host a World Cup. And right now, Captain America, quite possibly our best player, some would say the best player we've ever created in this country, stinks. What the hell's going on? This is the biggest problem we have right now. Our best player needs to play well, and he is not. Christian Pulisic has had a terrible run of form, not just in Serie A, but now, hold on, he hasn't scored since December 2025.
This is the top topic. His last goal contribution was an assist.
Against Torino?
That's true. However, the caveat being, we've seen Christian see slumps like this before, and they always follow the same script. Mm-hmm. It's either injury layoff, of which he's copped himself to wanting to come back sooner than he should, which has caused some delays and further problems down the road.
Right.
It's been inconsistent minutes or issues where he's not playing in his correct position.
Right.
And that sets him off.
Do you mean for the U.S. men's national team because he played striker in the last match? Or are you seeing something with Milan?
So with Milan, we've seen, again, as he's traversed different managers, he's also had the best success of his career at Milan. I need to add that caveat in here. Mm-hmm. He's played left wing. He's played right wing. He's played second striker. He's played second striker a lot more this season. We've seen him link up with Santi. We've seen him link up with Leao. He's been really successful there. He's had a really good first part of this season. Now the downturn comes, right? And so I think what we're seeing is sort of this capitulation, which we've seen with him a lot, and he does always steer out of it. And it usually comes as a result of managerial trust, consistent time in his own role, and then he yields goals. It's not an issue.
So he's had a bunch of managers, right? And this has been a problem in his career, right? I think he's up to like 14 managers that he's had in his career, which is insane when you think about it. But I go back to the Paulo Fonseca era at Milan, right? Probably not filled with the most success. I actually had a chance to talk to him directly when I went to Olympique Lyon, and I was talking to him in the sort of the players and coaches family room, which is really cool, right? Great food, by the way. I was shocked about that. They were like, do you want a kebab? And I was like, from you guys? And it turned out to be great. But I pulled him aside because I remember when I interviewed him when I was at CBS, I asked him, what position do you think Pulisic plays? Because he was using him as, it wasn't necessarily a false nine, but it was like a second striker that, it reminded me of like the, just in the position before I get railed for this. Railed, wow. Jesus. Before I get flamed for this. He was, remember when Luis Suarez would like sort of hover behind the striker and kind of roam? It felt the same, right? It felt like you find an open position, very Clint Dempsey-esque when he was at Fulham. It's like you find an open space, but stay behind the striker and support the striker. I asked him, what position does he play? And Paulo Fonseca kind of looked up and goes, he's a 9.5. And that's like a really creative way of saying, like, I'm not going to tell you, but it's basically in that area.
Yes.
Which I think we found, he found a lot of success. He found a lot of like good form in that. Maybe it's just the injury, but there's something about the way he looked in the final third. And maybe it was that decision-making, the sharpness, taking that extra touch, you know, almost being afraid to lose the ball more than he was looking forward to shooting on goal. Those little things. And these are just things that I'm drawing from watching the game, right? I can't get in his head and ask him exactly what was happening, but it's that sharpness that was never not there, you know? And it, part of me worries that maybe it was that he was trying to sort of, remember he was like a few years ago, he was trying to prove he was the best player of the U.S., that he was the guy that should take the reins from the Landon Donovans and the Clint Dempseys. He doesn't need to do that anymore. He's like a veteran at this point.
Right. I mean, I also
team.
Think that that's an external pressure that everyone sort of hoisted upon him, that he needs to be this next great thing instead of just being Christian Pulisic, mm-hmm. who happens to be wildly talented. The thing there is, I'd say his off-ball movement is still really good. So I don't think that it's a matter of everything being off kilter. I really do think it follows his usual script. And again, we've seen it happen. We saw it happen when he was at Chelsea. And like, that was absolutely a damned project then with the managerial shifts. And
lockdown Pulisic was great though.
Yeah, coming through Milan. Right. But again, like clear identity, minutes, and a clear directive.
Also chip on his shoulder, which I'm trying to suggest he may not have right now.
I don't think it's a matter of chip on your shoulder. Because
just look at his stats. Can we pull up his stats just so we can take a look at these? Because this isn't exactly, barn burning.
No, but what I'll say is he's now exceeded himself. He's bested himself at Milan.
Yeah, here we go. So he's got.
You're now looking for consistency, and you're also looking to essentially eclipse that, which is a lot harder, no matter who you are. Even if you are a star and emblematic of, I guess, now America as a whole, as a footballer.
Right.
The way that you go about sort of coming back from this, not only just like the slump, because it's more prominent now, right?
Yeah.
Because
and he's never done this. To have 8 goals on 7.21 XG is good, right? Like you're a little bit above that. 3 assists, you almost want him to have more assists just because of the position he plays. But like you said, it's also Maxi Allegri's system frustrates me sometimes. So
and I think that's fair.
15
but again,
starts in 23 matches, but hasn't scored in 12 games. Mm-hmm. That gives you worry because there was an era of time where even Milan fans were like, he's good, but, we had Shevchenko, The theory was like, I hope you enjoyed my accent there.
I loved it.
Right? The theory was like, he's good, but he's not going to bring back the glory to Milan. And then all of a sudden,
he starts
all of a sudden banging in goals left and right, being a very effective player. There was conversation whether it was him or Reinders, like who's the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. And maybe Reinders is a bit more techie, but Pulisic is going to cut it out and score when you need it. And now that's gone. And like that shines a lot more light on some of the like his mistakes or the things he doesn't have when he's not that guy that's scoring goals.
I think a little bit is the tinkering. Again, those pairings, playing as a second striker, going from Santi to Leao to Nkuku, some of the ways that things have been shaping up there. But also the Scudetto race, a lot of the wind got taken out of their sails early in March. okay? Because they lost some traction there. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a contributor, not just on him, but I think the squad as a whole, because you start to feel this kind of, I don't want to say hopelessness, but I think it's contributing to them mentally and the mental load that they have in Serie A. And then on top of that, coming back into this U.S. men's national team, and where Pochettino sees this as, I'm just trying to help him, so let me push him up. Right. It's not. It's honestly doing him a great disservice. Let him play where he's comfortable and let him move on the ball. He's got, what, Tillman, he's got McKenny to support him in the midfield. Let some of that fluidity come into play.
Yeah, don't, I'm done with the idea of him being a striker.
Right. And that's the problem. I don't need him. And I get it, right? You want to sort of let me give him a sniff of a goal, right? Let me give him this goal, maybe get some of his confidence.
Let him take a pen. What are we doing here?
Right. I don't think that that's the answer. He gets very comfortable where he needs to be. Yeah. And I think let him get entrenched in that and let him lock back in. Right. We do not need to be tinkering with him either mentally or tactically going into the World Cup as it gets closer and closer. The time for that is long gone.
Yeah. And I guess I don't watch Milan week in and week out, right? I watch them a lot, but I don't get in there week in and week out. They're not that far back in the Scudetto race, right? They're, what, 6 points behind Inter?
Yeah, that sounds about right now. But Inter seems to be primed to do what they have done.
Right. You and I are also Arsenal fans, so I just don't. Nothing is a victory. No title is given until it's hoisted.
Yes.
You know.
But I think there's Allegri's tactical reliance and inclinations that come into play here, and Inter and Kivu wanting to pull full steam ahead that become a hazard.
Right.
And especially when you get involved in a derby and that goes wrong.
Yeah.
But
maybe there's hopefully there isn't, but like an injury could turn the season around for Inter. Bastoni maybe comes back from the red card and he's not the same player. There's a lot that can happen, right?
Of course there is.
So there's a lot that can happen. So I don't think AC Milan are completely out. If they win the Scudetto, I have a feeling Christian Pulisic, it's because Christian Pulisic got back into form.
Yes.
They made a crazy run toward these last few matches of the season. And then he's going to go into the World Cup feeling like a beast.
I honestly am not at the point where I'm ready to just pull the eject button and panic.
Yeah.
Because, again, we've seen this before from Christian. And we've also seen his resurgence.
But have you've watched Maxi Allegri a million more times than I have, right? I know Juventus fans that are still begging for this guy to come back. And I always say the same thing. I'm like, why do you want this boring, sort of pragmatic, annoying football? Some people think Arsenal games are boring. Nothing is more boring than Maxi Allegri matches. It stinks.
Correct.
And yet,
it's not exciting.
Everybody wants it back because
he wins. It's not sexy football. It's not even just a win. It's the certainty of not a loss.
Right. Do you think that has affected Christian Pulisic? And in particular, do you think it's affected him going into a system with Poch, which is not the same? Poch wants something a bit more attractive.
Poch wants a lot of things that I think, quite frankly, are a little bit lofty that aren't actually substantiated in any real reality. But I digress.
Yeah.
Yes, and you're always going to be at the mercy of your manager and the tactics that they want to see and how they want you playing and where.
Yeah.
I think we've seen, I wouldn't put it entirely on Allegri, but I think that we've seen Allegri get into this position before where he starts to get a little bit more cautious because, yes, we are heading toward the tail end of the Serie A season.
Right.
He wants to make sure that they're still in a striking distance, if not pulling ahead.
It's the idea that if we never lose,
the safety
out, as opposed to we need to win.
Quite frankly, as a lifelong Juventus fan, even objectively, we've seen that happen there too.
Right. Yeah. So for me, it's like, how does that affect his gameplay with the men's national team? Look, he missed out on, what was it, Gold Cup? If I'm not mistaken, it was Gold Cup.
Yeah.
We have a new big screen, so I can't actually see our producer. He just has to hold the thumbs up. That was crazy. Also below, I can see you from below.
We playing footsie?
Yeah, I know, right? I can't see my guy. Yo, going to the table, not in a weird way. So we didn't see him in Gold Cup. He missed out on other competitions, other matches, where potentially we could see sort of what his life would look like under Pochettino. Clearly, there were some injury concerns. Clearly, we don't want him to rush back, which it feels like maybe he's rushed back a little too soon in an attempt for maybe Milan to be a bit more effective in the Scudetto race. And what we in turn now see is sort of a relatively, I don't want to say he's ineffective because I still think he did some things well. One thing that I want to give a lot of credit to Serie A for, a little bit tougher than it used to be, right? You're going to get past me. I'm going to tackle you a little bit. I'm going to hurt you a little bit. I'm going to trip you. Something just to remind you, I'm not a softie. So in a way,
last year he was among one of the most fouled players.
Now he's giving it back. So
yes. So I mean, you weather the storm and you come out on the other side. He is far more resilient than people give him credit for.
Right. And look, he's not the most public guy in the world, so we don't know exactly where his heart lays. But ever since he did the Trump dance and he scored, he hasn't scored since. And I have a feeling, I don't know, maybe that's part of the reason. You know what I mean? You got the bad zhuzh on you, you know? In fact, I bet you if you pair his career, he's only done well when Trump's doing well. You know what I mean? And that's not very often. I think that might be the case. No comment from Kupo. All right. Well,
I want to see him come back like he always has, quite frankly. Yeah. And Milan deserved better. He deserves better. He'll get there.
Right. Maybe if we remind him that if the U.S. win the World Cup, he gets to go to the White House, right? He'll probably be the only one going. But maybe that'll get him inspired. Have I gotten fired yet? In conjunction with Threads, we did an Ask Me Anything, and we got some amazing questions. I cannot wait to answer them, mostly about U.S. Men's National Team. Right now, we're going to react. We answered some on the internet, but we're going to answer the rest of them for you right now. So why don't we go ahead right to it? We got some really good questions. I can't wait for you to see these. A lot more responses than I thought we were going to get, which is pretty cool. All right, for the first one, Carrie Ohm, for asking this question. How far off is the U.S. Men's National Team from truly competing with top-tier nations, and what are realistic expectations for this squad at the World Cup? So that's a two-part question. Why don't we go with the first one? How far off is the U.S. Men's National Team from truly competing with top-tier nations? On a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think we are right now? 10 being the best.
I'd say a 7.
Okay. All right. I would say 6. The only reason I'd say 6 is because I don't think we have an out-and-out, mainly based on the form we've seen from our best players. I think right now, if you had to ask who's our best player, it's Weston McKennie. Mm-hmm. And where does he sit on the scale of like elite players? I wouldn't call him the top tier elite. He's not S tier. He's really close to it. He's probably one of the best midfielders in Serie A at the moment. I trust him as a player and I want him on the pitch for all 90 minutes everywhere, regardless of what position he's in. But he doesn't do this one thing so exceptionally well that we can depend on him. Like, he's not a goal scorer. He's not an assist maker. He's just always where he needs to be.
That's not a flaw, however.
No,
that's
not a flaw.
But it's by design.
Yeah. 100%. Right? Like, versatility can be seen as a negative sometimes.
Of course, yeah. Right? But that has been his calling card since going back to Schalke.
100%.
That he's been cultivated to be that way. And every time he's moved to a new club.
Right.
My expectation has been, oh, good, we'll get to see him specialize.
But for the men's national team, don't you think
and
we should have
And he ends up
like,
carrying water for everyone, sure. Everywhere, both club
water
and country.
Water carriers, great. Look, you need them. But I'm thinking if we had an elite striker or like an elite, like number 10, someone who's just like always pulling the right strings, I'd feel more confident of saying we're at a 7 or an 8. So that for me makes me feel like until we develop a top-tier
but I feel like
goal scorer.
If we felt like that about almost every position.
Right.
It would alleviate a lot of the multitasking that we ask of a lot of the more 100%. Elite players that we have.
Yeah, 100%. So the other part of the question is, what are the realistic expectations for the World Cup? What is in your mind, without saying like we need to be like right now, based on what you saw, what do you think is a realistic place where we're sort of booted? Because I don't think either one of us are going to say we're going to win the thing.
No, for me, my expectations I think are really realistic and probably a bit disappointing to anyone listening. Yeah. Get out of group.
Just get out of the group.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's the bare minimum, and I think that's exactly where I would be. Right,
like,
now the
what
bare
are
minimum
we benchmarking,
is
right? We can't be benchmarking against other elite nations' high marks.
No.
Right? We need to very much work within the parameters of what has the US men done previously.
Yeah.
What do we realistically think this particular squad can get done?
Yeah.
And we're still under a manager right now who's still tinkering with what that looks like.
Yeah, so there's too many questions
I'm just,
for us
I'm
to be
dragged
considered
down to reality.
Yeah. Who's your favorite right now for the World Cup? Do you have a favorite?
I don't think I really have a favorite. Quite frankly, I'm still trying to get over a few non-qualifiers.
Yeah.
I tend to lean very heavily with France in the last like few cycles.
France
quite
and
frankly.
Spain for me right now are the two that are obvious favorites. Doesn't mean they're going to win. Anything can happen.
No, it doesn't. But quite frankly, for me, the program itself, the players, the productivity, their club play.
France. Yeah, everyone's banging on all cylinders for France. All right, what's the next one? Thank you very much for that question, by the way. All right, we got Amobi says, he says, what formation gives the U.S. men's national team the best chance to succeed this World Cup? That's a great question. I like the fact that they're doing this sort of flowing formation. It's not a standard, you know, four at the back that run up together and run back.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen what Poch do 4-3-2-1. We've seen him do a 4-3-3 recently. Yeah.
I want three at the back. I think it gives us the most versatility. There's a little question there as to where Jedi plays. Who can play right wing back? You know, the Tim Weah experiment didn't exactly go the way I expected. I love him very much more in the attacking third than I do in the defensive third. So for me, I still think three at the back just gives us that extra bit of overload in the midfield that allows us to be a little bit more involved in the game than when we play four at the back. And I'm just a little worried that if Tim Ream is in either one of those formations,
which is
that, there's a point
right,
of attack
and
for
which
every
is
other
why
team.
It's not, I think, in my opinion, possible.
Yeah.
You need somebody that's quick and has the giddy up to be able to do that. It's and not, unfortunately, we don't have in that back line the mix of speed and experience.
Right.
We just don't have them together.
Right.
And so you're going to trade off one. And yes, like Ream is a great anchor and he's proven to stand up and step up when they really need them. But yeah, sure. I would love to see it some like really active wing backs, but like that's just not the way that the US team is comprised.
So if you had to pick a formation, I would go with 3-5-2.
I like a 3-5. I mean, is this just purely, or is this mental masturbation right now?
Watching this, you know what I mean? You can say whatever you want, you know?
Pochettino, what do you think, man?
Quick like, thoughts.
You know what? I'll go with you. I'll side with you.
3-5-2.
Sure. We'll go 3-5-2.
Goop. Oh, all right. What do we got next? Ah, the homie, Mike Lasky. Shouts to Mike Lasky. Always a big fan. If you were able to take one biggest positive takeaway and one biggest negative takeaway from the last two USMNT performances, what would they be? All right, let me go for the biggest positive takeaway. A part of me wants to say, like, we're sure Matt Freese is the goalkeeper, right? I think we've got that, but that's not necessarily the biggest positive. I would say for me, the biggest positive is that there's the fringe players that we thought that's not part of the quote unquote golden generation, or, you know, the put them in marker 11. I don't really think that exists anymore. I think some of the fringe players have proven that they belong, if not on the squad, essential part of the rotation. And that for me fills me with a lot of confidence. And I think that's the biggest positive from Mauricio Pochettino's run, which is we know who the best players are, but the players that no one thought of as the best players understand how to perform at a high level, have come in and feel like they're a part of this squad in a very big way. So for me, that's a massive positive, because you're not going to win the World Cup with 11 players. You need more than that. And if the guys coming off the bench feel just as confident that that's their position as the guys that started the match, then we're in a good place, or in a better place than we were in the past.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with that. I'm trying to think, like, what's
better takeaway? What's a more positive
takeaway? Yeah, I mean, there's definitely positives to be had, right? Like, I think we have a talented group that we've honed in on, which is undeniable. I think the biggest negative, I think, probably is, like, one, the tinkering still that's happening for me.
Nothing's settled yet. It's kind of crazy.
Right. It's just, this is not the time nor the place.
Yeah.
You know, like, yes, test and try and whatever. I don't know. I know that Poch speaks with Emma Hayes. I don't understand why he hasn't adopted some of her rigor.
No, you're right.
And,
let's blame Emma Hayes,
and like,
bro.
Bravado.
What is wrong with you, Emma?
No,
help us out.
I'm saying she's the blueprint.
Yeah.
That works. And yes, it's very hard to say, like, oh, we'll try this, do that, whatever. The women's pool is way deeper.
Yeah.
But also, perhaps if he had started sooner venturing into those waters, we would have yielded some youth.
Time has always worked against them.
You know, like, you're marching into a World Cup year, and yes, time is against you, but also, like, not to make this about the women, but, like, Emma Hayes won the Olympics in less time.
Right away.
Yeah. Yes, they had a more complete, robust program already, but it's everything that she's done since then. So for me, it's that.
Also,
and
I feel like there's a...
Trying to, looking back, and I feel like the ship still hasn't left the dock in terms of, like, yes, this is our best 11, and we're still looking back going, I'm still going to call Gio Reyna in.
Right, which we'll talk about that, because I agree with bringing Gio Reyna, and I know I might be alone. But I guess by now, I think most fans should have an idea of what the 11 is, and I think if we asked, there'd be a lot of, there'd be a couple positions that we wouldn't all get correct. And normally by this time, everyone kind of understands what the best 11 is, and we don't have that yet. But for me, my biggest negative will probably be the mentality. And it's, I know that's like a weird sort of broad stroke, and there's really no way to define it, but there's a cutting edge. There's something from Pochettino that I thought this team would take, which is a never give up, that Argentinian style of like, until all the blood is run out of your body, you still have something to give. And that hasn't really materialized in this squad yet. And that worries me a little bit. And that's something where I think Emma Hayes can absolutely be a massive compliment to Pochettino. Because if there's one thing I look at the women, and I can sit here and say, the women's national team for the U.S. are hands down the best players in the world, most of them in their positions. And when they come together, there's a very sort of clear understanding of what each of them needs to do to win as a unit versus what they independently have to do. And I think that's a massive compliment to Emma Hayes and the way that she runs the team. The one thing where I think Emma Hayes just has a clear advantage is these women's national team players, and whether it comes from Emma Hayes or not, understand when they go in, they know what they got to do. They understand that, yo, we can't leave anything on the table. The men's team hasn't shown me that exactly just yet under Pochettino. And to me, that's a worry. When it was under Greg Berhalter, it felt like Greg Berhalter's job was to make these young men into men, or these young boys into men, and get them to really believe that they're the men's national team players. And I always say his tenure was good because he did that. You know what I mean? He's not the guy to get them over the line. He got them a bunch of trophies and were great, but he's not the guy to get them into the World Cup at the highest levels. Pochettino seemed like the guy that could carry that forward, and I haven't seen that forward progress.
I think the big, big, big deal right there, and I think that was the expectation of everyone involved, is Pochettino is a massive cultural disconnect from what actually exists here.
Well, give us your culture. Argentina wins.
That's not how it works. I mean,
forget the Tottenham
stuff. No, you know, like that just, it's not how it works.
I know. Right? I
like,
wish it was.
It's like walking into a room of people that only speak Spanish and trying to speak to them in English. And that's the best way I can illustrate what's going on between the team that exists. And I'm obviously not speaking on the nose in terms of language, but in terms of cultural fluency and the team that exists there.
No,
and
what they're like my friends that are British, I can't, like, I think I'm great and if I try something it'll work. British culture is the opposite. They're like, it's never gonna work, blah, blah, blah. And I'm always telling my friends, like, I think you're great, just go do it. And their main thought is no, because their culture is a bit more pessimistic than ours, where we believe in individual excellence. And I wish the national team
would. There's a lot
as well.
Of individualism. Yeah. And quite frankly, if we're being totally honest, that has been the legacy of the U.S. men's national team. It's always been a bunch of individuals, and we've relied on individual brilliance. That
we ain't got it now,
right?
Well, coach, get out there and kick a ball. We got another individual excellence. We got a question from, is this from Billy Gleason, the homie? Shouts to Fuller Gleason. How far does the U.S. men's national team need to go in this tournament to keep it from being a disappointment? All right, so we kind of talked about you got to at least get out of the group.
Yeah,
but let's build on this question a little bit. What is the level where you go, you know what? They did great. What's the level where you're like, you know what? We didn't win it, but we're full of pride. So there's a round of 32 now.
Right.
We got to at least get through that. If we get booted.
I'd say round of 16.
But like, okay, a round of 16 we weren't bossed around the pitch. Something magical had to happen for us to lose. You know what I mean? I'm cool with that.
Right. Especially given the evidence that they have certainly lost in unremarkable ways.
Yeah. Like the game against Belgium, right, where Tim Howard saved 16 and Wondolowski could have won it. If we walk away going, yo, we showed that on a world stage we belong, I'm cool. Even if we get booted at that level, I'm cool. But if we go into the round of 16 and we're absolutely getting bossed around the pitch and we look lifeless and, you know, similar to the way we did against Portugal, where Portugal didn't even have to get out of second gear, I'm going to walk away and go, I don't care if we had like a good 30, 35 minutes. No, we need to show from the first whistle to the final whistle that this is life or death for us. If we do that and still walk away, we did our best and we still lost, I'm cool. At least a round of 16.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is two different questions, right? Like, it's how do you expect them to achieve, like, what success contextually? And that would be just eclipse the best that the U.S. men's national team program has ever done. Right. Or it's based on, you know, context now.
Yeah.
The reality of, like, this is where we are. This is who the manager is. This is how they've played. They're not coming off of a really successful couple of friendlies, in my opinion. And now this is going to be their prepared and readiness for enduring this tournament, which is going to be grueling.
Doesn't leave us with a lot of confidence. All right. I have a feeling this one's pointed directly at you, and I was correct. Okay. Robbie Slovic, very funny comic, said, should Italy fans with no team in the World Cup root for the USA since New York, New Jersey is basically their second home? It's a great point, right? If Italians, you probably got cousins who live in the New York, New Jersey area.
Yeah, considering we all kind of highly like focused here, given that Ellis Island was a mass emigration.
You didn't really have much of a choice. You went to where the big green lady was.
The dream was go upstate. Yeah. Or, you know, somehow we've traveled to also Canada and
Toronto got
Florida.
A bunch of Italians.
Yeah.
More modern
so
Italian
does Vancouver.
Immigration. But yeah.
So does.
I said Secaucus, New Jersey hung all their cutlets at half mast when Italy didn't qualify. So if you were your cousins in Italy, Cupo, would you tell them to root for the good old USA, or are they just going to become de facto Argentinians during this World Cup?
Meaning,
or do you think they don't watch
it
all?
My family in Italy, we're talking about. Absolutely not. They're not rooting for the US.
They can't root for the US.
They won't be rooting for
the US. What are they going to root for? Chaos.
Probably.
Yeah?
Yeah, honestly, probably chaos. Or I'm trying to think, like, they'll probably end up going the route of, like, following players.
Players. My favorite club is blank, and they're like, I love Inter, and Çalhanoğlu is on the Turkish team, so I'm going to root for Turkey.
Or like, oh, like I'm a Milan fan, and so it's easy to make the crossover. I'll root for Mexico Portugal. That'll be the vein that they follow.
I would love to see Italians rooting for Mexico. That would be hilarious to me. Just go to Mexico and enjoy your life.
There's a diaspora there of Italians.
Yeah. The Caesar salad was invented by Italians in Mexico. It's a Mexican dish, folks. Who knew? All right, we got another question. The great Nate Bucchini, folks. Huh? We get nothing but stars asking questions here. If U.S. soccer was pizza, okay, buckle in, folks. Okay. If U.S. soccer was pizza, what type of crust are we working with? Compare each player to a pizza topping. Why? All right, we can't do every player. But if we had to say a crust, all right, so there's like New York style crust. There's Chicago deep dish. There's the Chicago thin. There's Jersey bar pie. There's New Haven, which is just original New York style. Stop believing the hype.
I feel like we have to go like bar pie because like the crust, i.e. the foundation's a little flimsy, but it's crunchy.
So that's actually a great point. First of all, applause to you, all right? Because one, that is perfect.
So when you have an Italian on staff what kind of pizza do you want to cook?
If we asked this question with Christian here, he'd be like, what do you mean? What is the crust? You know? He's going to be so confused. He's like, I've never had pizza.
I've only seen photos of cauliflower crust.
Yeah, cauliflower. He would 100% say gluten-free cauliflower crust. And I'd want to flip this table, but it's too heavy. And then I get another hemorrhoid. But it's too heavy. But I think bar pie is the right thing because it's like, it's good, but you're like, you're not texting your homies like, yo, get down here. They got bar pies. Mm-hmm. It's like, yo, I'm drinking and I'm enjoying myself.
Yep.
And I'm going to eat this thing. And it was pretty good. You know.
And pizza's pizza.
Pizza's pizza. I don't necessarily fully believe that. But
I don't,
also
but I'm just saying a little bit.
It ain't bad, right? Somebody hands you a pizza. You're not like, boo. You know, you're like, all right. So for me, it's not the worst thing we've ever seen, Chicago. Deep dish.
Yeah, that's
and it's
bad.
Not the best we've ever seen. Lindstrom, I'm wearing the hat. But to me, it's somewhere in between. I think a Jersey bar pie is a good thing. It's like, it's circumstantial that you enjoy it, but you're not going out of your way for it. And I want the U.S. to be a little better.
Yeah. It holds the topping.
Absolutely.
It's adequate.
Yeah. And by the way, Weston McKennie, I'm not going to go to everyone. Weston McKennie, he's crushed red pepper because you always want him there, but it's not the reason you go for the pizza.
Ooh. See, I mean, it's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There we go. All right. We sold her. All right. Next one. We got, the exchange. Shouts to the exchange. We see him in the press box. If USMNT didn't have an automatic qualification for the World Cup, do they qualify for this World Cup? I say yes. And actually, I think it would have been better if we had to qualify because it would have been meaningful matches leading up to this World Cup.
Yeah. More testing early on. Again, what we've already talked
about.
Pochettino
would have to make these decisions quick. No
you
testing.
You have to commit and just follow through. And if it fails, you make the changes and you move forward.
Yeah. So that's a great question. I do think they would have qualified, but I think we would have seen the 3-5-2 a lot longer. And I think we would have players that were, shouldn't they? I think they'd be out a little quicker. We wouldn't see the experimentation. So I kind of wish that was the case. All right. What else we got? Mike Ryan Ruiz. Shouts to Mike Ryan Ruiz. Everybody watch him on TV. How the hell is this generation of players apparently jaded by a World Cup experience? One thing you could always count on with the U.S. men's national team was a certain mentality. Why is this now gone? So we kind of spoke about this, right? And to me, I think the mentality comes down to, and I'm not one of these people that thinks like, oh, the players are babied now and they're prima donnas. And but there's like the U.S. men's national team players couldn't consider themselves successes until they showed it on the world stage. Now there's other ways. These players have lifted trophies in Europe. These players feel success. They don't feel as if the national team is the only place. What changes from other nations, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Italy's maybe a bad example right now, but playing for the Azzurri is a pride, right?
Yes.
It doesn't feel like an obligation. This is a thing of pride. Your grandmother's crying. Your family's crying. It's the proudest your male figure
you
growing up has
sing,
ever been.
You see scream the anthem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Playing for the national team is, in the U.S., doesn't have the history. It doesn't have the connotation that it does for a lot of European nations or South American nations or nations anywhere else in the world. It doesn't carry the same thing. So you almost have to manufacture it yourself. You have to feel it yourself. And unfortunately, these players aren't really feeling it, right? So for me, I think because they find success in other places, this is great. This is what we wanted. We wanted better players. But now we need the U.S. men's national team to feel like so much more. And it just doesn't yet. Not even the way the women's national team feels.
Yeah, I feel like...
Did I make sense?
No, you did make sense.
The okay, difference you started that there, with no, so I was worried.
No, because my brain was like, yeah. Sorry, that's a very New York thing to do. Yeah. No, yeah.
No, you're doing great. No. And you're like, wait, what?
The women's national team has been built on a legacy of success.
Right. Don't drop
winning,
this ball if you're going to play.
Winning.
We got
winning,
stars
winning.
Above our crest, yeah.
Right. And I think that's where the conversation is very different, right? So the older generations, and this isn't knocking anyone that came before in the men's national teams, but the game was different.
Yeah.
They played differently. They played in different places. Now, current, present day, footballing, it's evolved.
Yeah.
There's more asks of you. There's different systems. Yes, the game is the game, right? But they're seeing such high achievement in various top global leagues for the U.S. players that prior players have never seen. And I've had this argument before.
It was a big deal when a player in the men's national team was in Europe before.
And like
and
I'd
doing
say,
well.
Still, I will stand 10 toes down. The only player that you can really argue one for one in terms of any of the successful current players is Deuce.
Clint Dempsey,
that's it.
Yeah.
So this mythology of what they were like then is a great, you know, to weave into the current story. But I think that the expectations and what actually transpired is now more of a mythology than a reality. And so when you're comparing the two things, it's just not going to ever match up.
Yeah. And I think to put a bow on this, and thank you for everyone that asked questions. I think the thing that stands out to me with Clint and everyone else is Clint came from nothing. He came from like the hood, and I don't romanticize poverty, and I'm not saying players should come from poor beginnings, but there was something about where he's like, yo, I can't go home. Like, I got nowhere else to go. I need
it
this
was the
to
combination
work.
Of Clint is special.
Yeah.
Clint is a hard worker.
Yeah. And he wanted it more than anyone else. And now these players, I want them, and I'm not saying they don't want it. I want them to show that they want it as much as we could see it clearly. Clint, thank you everyone who sent in your questions. Shouts to Threads for doing this with us. It's pretty cool. We got some wild questions. Somebody asked what that mouth do. We can't air that, dude. You know what I mean? Like, why? Shoot it to my DM, bro. I'll answer it. Italy is now going to miss its third World Cup in a row.
The problem is systemic. Italy cannot keep trying to live off the mythology of calcio.
I agree. And let me tell you why the people that have already resigned are the ones that Italy needs. And the ones that are still there are the ones probably most responsible for this absolute failure. Introducing our newest segment, Six Pack of Reactions, presented by Smirnoff Ice, the official ice cold beverage for every match this summer. All right, this is called Six Pack of Reactions. Christine, give me your first reaction.
Okay, my first reaction. Italy did not qualify for this upcoming World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
My big reaction is burn it to the ground. quite frankly, I feel like that's not even a big enough reaction. Baggio, over a decade ago now, issued a structural warning to Figci and all of Italy, letting them know that this would be a problem that would cause a massive, massive collapse.
Was this a 900-page report that
this
I heard about?
This was, in fact, a Rinnovare il Futuro is what it was called. So essentially renovating the future, like rebuilding, right? That was the essence of what Baggio told them needed to happen. And this national team now is a bill that's come due yet again.
That's a good way to look at it.
So quite frankly, Italy needs to address the systemic issues. This collapse is in a series. And quite frankly, they need to do simple things that you would think would be established within a country where calcio is DNA. It's not something that they do. It's something that we are. Mm-hmm. And so quite frankly, it's rebuilding, you know, the structures, the pipelines for youth, standardizing them, getting a central database that scouts players. Because
funny enough, this is what we assume every European nation does better than us.
They're still doing this in piecemeal in Italy. So it's by word of mouth. It's regionally. It's not. There's no central communication hub, despite what you would like to believe in the year 2026.
Everyone who's ever tried to call like a contractor in Italy right now is going, oh, wait a minute. There's no structure. People just show up when they want.
Yeah.
I like that reaction. I want to piggyback on that reaction. My first reaction is Italy not qualifying for the World Cup. This is for the third time in a row. That Euros that Italy won in between the first two kind of papered over a lot of cracks and made people believe, oh, the change is coming. It has not come. This is an expanded World Cup, 48 nations, and Italy still couldn't qualify. I believe Italy was knocked out by North Macedonia previously, mm-hmm. and now Bosnia-Herzegovina after laughing at the fact that they qualified via penalties and sort of the players enjoying the fact that they were going to play Bosnia-Herzegovina. There is a complete disconnect between who they really are and what they are currently. And they are a nation that deserves to be in a World Cup. They are a nation that provides great players. The system itself, like you said, is not built to sort of put a structure around it. There are 11 players in that nation that could get this team qualified to the World Cup. And there is a weird reason we haven't been able to put that together. The fact that the striker potentially could be an Argentinian guy who at one time couldn't even start for Boca, that should scare you. I know he's a lot better. Hradecki's a lot better now. But that at that moment when he got picked for the Italian team should start to scare you that structurally there's an issue. And the two people that I've heard immediately resign were Gigi Buffon and Gattuso. Gattuso did not do a great job as the manager. Didn't do a good enough job as a manager. But I think
Gattuso is the least to blame
Absolutely.
In the grand scheme of things. 100%. I just want to put that out
on the
front.
List of people mm-hmm. to blame, the two people that you probably want to stick around, people that have won the World Cup before, people that understand what it takes, people understand what the Atsuri means, what wearing that badge means. Those are the people you want around. I remember a conversation I had with a very big legend, flex, but he was telling me that Milan firing Maldini would be an issue. And I said, well, Maldini's not like the best exec in the world. And he said, no, but having someone there who understands what it takes to win pays itself off in other ways. You need to have someone who knows what it takes to win in order to succeed yourself, to win something so, so difficult that where you need all the kismet to match up like a World Cup. And not having those folks there is not going to benefit Italy. Italy doesn't need Gigi Buffon to hold his hat in his hands. They need Gigi Buffon there. What you don't need are all the people in suits who have no clue what it's like to win a World Cup, who have let this failure sustain itself for so long, either because they're making money or because it's easier to let it live this way. Those are the people that should be resigning. Those are the people that should be brought to the front and kicked out of their offices, not the people who helped you win, who helped you win in the past.
Gravina si è dimesso. Gravina officially resigned. And quite frankly, he needed to.
Yeah.
But he should have been the first resignation, not the second, not the third mm-hmm. in this grand scheme of things. Beyond that, this Italian team needs more than just the DNA, the grinta, the Tottis, the Buffons to stick around mm-hmm. to say, hey, here's what needs to happen. They need somebody that can also communicate to the current generations and stop this, it's the damn phones mentality. It's
Enough.
Not that we've turned the page. We've evolved beyond that.
They blame the radio at one point. Right, you know what I mean? It's always something.
Reality is you need to be somebody that can both carry the past with you mm-hmm. and communicate with the present and the future.
Yeah.
And we have not had that.
Because I do believe Italy doesn't have to be Catenaccio, right? You can win in a different way.
And it hasn't
But you have
been.
To win. You have to win. But Buffon recently said like, oh, this was the DNA of ours. There's other ways to win. It just doesn't have to be that. But you have to have a soul. You have to have a soul. You have to have a soul. All right, let's get on to, look at this. The last time Italy scored a goal in the World Cup was against Mario Balotelli against England in 2014. That is embarrassing. Okay, well, don't bring back Mario Balotelli, but other people, you know what I mean? Other people, he's a bit of a head case. Why don't we go into your next Smirnoff Ice reaction?
Yes. Iraq qualifying with that door cracked open in the 48th spot for the first time in 40 years.
Crazy.
Okay. And Iraq, they just
look at these scenes.
It's not just the fact that they managed to squeak this through. You have to realize that the number one sport passion in Iraq is football.
Yeah.
So this is like the equivalent of football not coming back for Argentina in 40 years. And then all of a sudden, boom, they're back again. So this was such a seismic reaction that the celebrations in Baghdad, the celebrations in Monterrey, they had Mexican fans joining in and throwing their hats down, the caballero, down onto the pitch where the Iraqi players were putting them on and celebrating in them. It just is such a momentous, joy-filled, unifying event that it makes you remember in a very trying time, especially now, how important that unity is, how endeared, how passionate nations are about their football teams. It's just really nice to see it come back to a nation that really, really needs it.
When people complain about the expanded World Cup, I say, look at these scenes. It's absolutely incredible. Actually, now that that Iraq is qualified, George W. Bush put up a sign that said mission accomplished. It's like, no, that's not true. You actually have to go to win. You have to play and you have to do well. So
one of the other like small things that I was like, oh my goodness, this could have been a bad thing. It's one of the coaching staff for Iraq after they qualified had collapsed and fainted on the pitch.
He's okay though.
He's okay from reports that I've seen today. But I think that that just adds to the how grand this is.
What this means. This means so much to so many people. Yeah. And that's actually my it leads right into my reaction, which is the expanded World Cup was such a good idea. And I get that the additional games, I get that, you know, the additional week or two that it's going to take for a World Cup to complete. And I know people are really, they hate change and they want it to stay the same. And maybe it doesn't mean as much in certain stats if, you know, how many goals were scored throughout the tournament and whatnot. It sort of diminishes what other players in the past were able to do. Had they had an expanded World Cup, maybe they would have scored more goals. So I understand it's going to skew things. But when you look at Iraq, when you look at DR Congo, when you look at Sweden, when you look at some of these nations, the scenes of them qualifying, that to me is that's what this whole competition's about. It's not about the stats and it's not about how you feel or it's not about how I feel. It's about how those players and those nations feel that haven't had the chance to be a part of something like this that are getting the chance. Does it water down the level of competition? Absolutely. It's going to create some really swayed contests, right? Where you're going to have a minnow versus, a tried and true elite nation. Fine. But this is what changes those things. I remember being a kid and getting a chance. The first professional match I ever went to was a World Cup match. It was Italy versus Ireland in the old Meadowlands. I had no idea what I was going to walk into. When I saw how much it meant to Irish fans and the Italian fans, I've never been to a sports event that felt like that. And that changed my viewpoint. It made me want to be a part of the sport. It made me want to start playing it. I found out fat kids don't always make it on the team. And then I decided I'm going to yip. I'm going to talk about it. And here I am, right? That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for that match, if it wasn't for the grandeur, if it wasn't for the parking lot filled with all the fans and the flags and everything. And just for the moment, for a nation like Iraq or a moment for like the Bosnia, and I know that's probably a touchy subject for you, but to see Bosnia the way those, you know, and Dzeko, you know, crying at 40 something years old. I said he was old 5 years ago, and here he is still playing, getting his team to a World Cup. It's absolutely incredible. And I, you know, part of me says, hey, if it's called the World Cup, let the whole world play. You know what I mean? I'm one of those people. Let everyone qualify, and whoever makes it, whoever doesn't. I do have one more, and I want to piggyback on what I just said again. My last Smirnoff Ice reaction is very simply that. What happened with DR Congo, watching them qualify in Sweden to go from not winning and qualifying to finally making it through and, you know, Jokera is scoring and having the entire stand all do the same, his sort of celebration. All these could be movies. You know, I look at the F1 series on Netflix and I think how many Americans not suddenly care about F1 because of all of the drama associated. they should be making, every nation should have cameras following them and making movies out of this qualifying. The drama with Italy, the, you know, not making it for a third time in a row and having microphones in, inside those locker rooms and cameras in those locker rooms. Sweden celebrating, the fans of DR Congo making it through. These are the moments that I, as a football fan, live for.
Yeah.
And I would love to get behind the scene and see a, you know, a 30 for 30. I mean, look at this. Huh? Big dude's got a place in this game, okay? Look at my guy. Hell yeah, bro. God, my wife has seen this too many times. I'm not going to lie to you. My wife has pulled up to the apartment with me listening to reggaeton, literally looking like this, just minus the tan.
Listen, the humanity of football is what we all fall in love with, right? That's the romantic side of it that lures you in.
And DR Congo doesn't think they're going to win it. They're just happy to be there.
But also, like, the last time that they were there, it was Zaire.
50 years ago.
And so when you look at...
look at this.
Unrest, the diaspora, the resurgence. It's, I don't know, the stories here are so just tangible. You feel them.
This is what people or young kids that are involved in this are going to remember this forever. You know, men and women that are above the age of 52, maybe closer to 60, 65, who maybe remember the last time this nation took part in this competition, to see it happen again, the flooding of tears and the flooding of emotions that must be happening. I wish I was in the Congo for this, and I wish I was in Sweden when they qualified. Those moments, man, I just want to be a part of that. And that's why it's a real shame that some nations. Yeah, this is for, baby. Look at this. Everyone is celebrating in the same. They're doing the Jokinis. He got them into this World Cup, man. He had an absolute run. What a celebration. Do it for Arsenal, okay? Just do it for Arsenal is all I'm asking. Just do it for Arsenal. I'll be there right behind you with the joint.
Listen,
yeah.
We can all day.
Kupo's a gooner as well. You make up what that sentence of what you want. But what an unfortunate nickname we picked. But this is absolutely amazing. And as far as I'm concerned, put it all over Netflix. I want to see all of this, man. Put it on Netflix.
Wait, can we make it? I'll do it. I'll do that docuseries.
We'll produce it. Smirnoff Ice. We need a little bit more money. Just a teensy bit. We're getting into movie production now. Thank you so much, Smirnoff Ice and all that. That was absolutely a blast. Thank you to everyone who took part in our AMA. We're going to do more of those. So everyone, you know, stay tuned because that was a lot of fun. Thank you for everyone who's watched or listened. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button. What does Christian usually say at this moment? It's a hot show. I think I missed that. I should have said that. make sure you hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button if you haven't already. That'd be amazing. And you know what you could do right now? Text your mother and tell her you love the Cooligans. And then when she asks who that is, send her the link to the show and then tell her if she doesn't share it with five friends, you're going to kill the family dog. I think that would help us out a lot. Just trust me on this. Just don't even worry. Christine Cooper, how are we feeling about that?
I'm going to go call the ASPCA, maybe a few other organizations.
I didn't
put them
say
on
to
watch.
Do it. I just said, text your mother you're going to do it.
Text your mother. Tell her you love her.
Yeah, that's not bad advice. do that. I think it's all Easter this weekend, right?
It is.
Yeah, you doing anything?
I have a pastiera napolitana to make.
Oh,
so
my God. I'll take two.
I will come by. Yeah. I will come by. I only know how to make them in quantities of three, coincidentally.
This
I don't
is,
know
Italians
why.
Only know how to make things in bulk. No Italian's ever made pasta for one. It just doesn't exist.
I got you.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. Well, I'm going to be eating panini this weekend, hanging out with my family. It was also Matteo's birthday that we missed this week. So happy birthday to Matteo. I hope Christian and Helena are enjoying their vacation. I need you back, buddy. I don't know how anything in this room works. he does a lot of work behind the scenes.
I know. I've sitting here, watched him do it before.
So normally he would say, I hope all your teams lose. I hope they all win, unless they're playing Arsenal. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you guys on Monday, right? We got a big episode on Monday. Wait till you see it. It's a big, 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 big interview. Uh-oh. We're getting bigger names here, and we have to apologize after every interview. So you guys got to listen. It's pretty crazy. I get myself in trouble a little bit on this one. It's going to be awesome. Stay tuned. Enjoy your weekend.